Well, this morning we are in part two of this series called Stand for Shelby. And over the course of the whole month of July, as we sort of ramp up towards Community Impact Day, we are revolving this series about what it really looks like to stand for our city. And every single week, as we dive into the message and as we dive into God's word, I want to do the very best I can to give you guys some disclaimers to prepare you for what we're all in for. Disclaimer number one this morning would be this. As we sort of jump into this series and as we look at a series title like Stand for Shelby, there are probably some of you out there who are saying, well, Ben, I'm not from Shelby. I don't live in Shelby. And so what does this look like for me? What does this mean for me? And what I believe is that while us collectively here at CORE, we're located in Shelby, we're focusing on an impact in Shelby, I also believe that throughout this series, there are so many incredible things that we're going to be talking about that give you the ability to make an impact, to stand for your city, for your community individually. You see, yes, we make an incredibly big difference collectively, but there's also a part to be played for each of us individually. And while this series is titled Stand for Shelby, for you it might also look like, what does it mean to stand for Ontario, to stand for Belleville, to stand for Mansfield, to stand for Plymouth, to stand for fill in the blank of whatever your city and your community is. That all of these things contribute to what does it look like for us individually to begin to stand in a sitting world. Disclaimer number two, and this is one that I'll probably give each and every week. As you can tell, we're already there. And that is, I warned you last week that this is a series that I would challenge you to sort of sit back, to fasten your seatbelt, to strap in, and to get ready to go. Because we're going to fly through some things. You're going to see me get fired up really, really quickly. You're going to see me start to get worked up from this stage. And the reason that I'm warning you and telling you to sort of buckle up and to get ready to go is because this is a series that strikes so close to my heart. I don't know how you feel about your city. You might hate your city, but it's where God has placed you right now. And it's where he wants you to begin to do something. Or maybe you're like me and you love your city. Like, I am so passionate about my city. This is where I want to be. This is where I was called back to. I want to see every bit and every piece of my city be successful. I want to see things go well for the people of my city. I want our city to be the best city in the world. That's how much I love Shelby, Ohio. But what I've learned over the course of my 31 years in life is that as much as I love my city and as much as I want the very best for my city and the people in my city, what I've also learned is that if I want my city to be successful, it requires me to do something. It requires you to do something. You see, we just can't continue to sit and watch. We have to be willing to stand. We have to be willing to stand out and stand up and stand strong. Because if we want things to change, if we want to make a positive difference in our city, it requires something from us. And I want to be a part of that positive change. I'm tired of sitting and watching while things continue to stay the same. I don't want to be the one that points the finger and says, well, things aren't getting any better because of you. Things aren't changing because of that thing that's happening. I want you to catch this right off the bat. Wouldn't we rather be a church that our city points at and says, well, at least they're trying to be a part of the solution? That our city points at and says, well, they're trying to do something? Than for us to be a church that points at our city and says, you're the problem. Because when we sit and do nothing, that's exactly what we're not willing to do anything about it, but you're the problem. You're the reason things are so bad. But God is calling us to so much more. God is calling us to be a part of the solution in our city, in our communities, in our state, in our country, and in our world. But it requires us to stand up. Now, what's running through each and every one of your minds is you're saying, well, if that's what God wants for us, if that's what you're saying God is calling me to, and maybe for some of you, you're a little skeptical about this whole God thing or this whole church thing this morning. I get that. I understand that. But for others of you, you're asking the question, well, then explain to me what this looks like. Explain to me, if God's really calling us to stand for our city, then somebody tell me what we're standing for. Because it's not just about standing for anything. We see a whole lot of things in our city. We see a whole lot of things that oftentimes we think, well, that's not right. That's going wrong. That's not the way that it should be. And we just stand up. We try to yell the loudest, but it's not just about standing for anything. It's about standing for the right things at the right time for the right reasons. You see, that's what this series is about. Yes, we want to stand, but we also want to be committed to a church that stands at the right time and the right way for the right reasons. And as human beings, sometimes we need a reminder, don't we? As human beings, sometimes we just, I don't know about you, but I do. I just need a little clarity on what God is actually calling me to in this world, because I see a whole lot of things going on that I'm not happy with. I see a whole lot of things going on in our city that I wish were different. I see a whole lot of things going on in my own life that I wish would change just a little bit. And so what are we supposed to stand for? And this morning, I want to do the best that I can that as we talk about standing up for our city, of giving some clarity on what we here at Core Community Church are going to take a stance for. You see, I believe that God is calling us collectively to stand up to two things in our city and in our world. There are two things that we are standing up for individually and collectively. The first is this, and this is the easy one. You see, we're standing up to the injustices in our city. We're standing up to these things, this brokenness and this hurt and some of this unfairness that's happening all around us in our city. The poor, the brokenhearted, the beat down, the impoverished. Those are the injustices of the world that our God has a heart for. And all throughout his word, like we don't have to search very far in this book to see that our God talks over and over and over and over again about how much he wants to reach out to the brokenhearted, about how much he wants to lift up the beaten down, about how much he wants to comfort the hurting. And so if we serve a God that's all about standing up for the injustices that are happening around us, shouldn't that be what we're about? Shouldn't that be what we are called to? And I love this. This is so incredible. This speaks directly to the heart of God. This morning we're going to jump in and we're going to start in Psalm chapter 12. And in Psalm 12, it talks directly to God fighting for the injustices of the world around us and calling us to do the same. Check this out. Starting in verse 5, it says this. The Lord replies, I have seen violence done to the helpless, and I have heard the groans of the poor. I have seen all this injustice happening around. Now I will rise up to rescue them, as they have longed for me to do. Now I will rise up. Right? What's another word for that? Now I will stand up and I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to stand in the gap and I'm going to stand up to the injustices that are happening all around us in our city. The second thing that we're committing to standing up to is this, and this is the difficult one. We're standing up to fellow Christians who aren't standing. Watch out. Here at Core, we're committing to standing up to fellow Christians who are sitting when God is calling us to stand. And I love this verse. We come back to it very, very often here at CORE. But I think it speaks so much to the truth of what God is calling us to in our relationship with other Christians. Here's what it says in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. And maybe some of you have heard this before. But it says this. And let us consider how we may, hold on to this word, spur one another on toward love and good deeds. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Now, how many of us really know? We'll see how many of you guys are, you know, you got your inner cowboy inside of you. You know what a spur is. Yes, most of us, right? We know what a spur is. A spur is something that is worn on the back of a cowboy boot, and what does it do? It goes into the side of the horse to make the horse go. Sometimes that spur isn't a pleasant thing. It's an opportunity to say to each other, look, we're not doing what we're supposed to, we're not going like God is calling us to go. We're not doing what he's called us to do. And we're saying that if we're really brothers and sisters with one another, that we should have the right. We should have the right to spur each other. Don't mental picture that. That we should spur each other on to helping the person sitting next to you stand as you stand and know that God is calling us to stand collectively. Now, if you really were honed in to those two things that I just said, that we're standing up to the injustices of our city and we're standing up to fellow Christians who aren't standing, probably a lot of you, that sparks a little bit of fear inside of you, doesn't it? Because not only are those two really big things, but if we're going to stand up to those two things in our life and in our world, both of those things require some sort of confrontation and conflict, don't they? In order to stand up to those two things, it requires us to enter into some sort of confrontation or conflict with other things and other people in this world. And when we get just the slightest hint of that one word, it sends these like shivers through us, doesn't it? At least for a lot of us. A few years ago for our anniversary, my wife and I, we got an opportunity for the very first time. In fact, we haven't been back since, but it was incredible. We got an opportunity for our anniversary. We went to Broadway at Playhouse Square, and we got to see The Lion King. Phenomenal. I mean, it was absolutely incredible to watch this. I mean, they've got like 14-foot giraffes that are solely made out of people. You know, a couple people as each leg and the body and the heads and all this stuff. It was incredible stuff. But the one thing I remember, for those of you who maybe have ever seen The Lion King on Broadway, or maybe you've just seen the movie The Lion King, there's this one part where we get introduced to the enemy of the story. And his name was... yes, you guys know. His name was Mufasa. And there's this part where all the hyenas come out and they're talking about him. And every time they say the word Mufasa, all of the hyenas are like, ooh, Mufasa, ooh. And they start to shrink back and they get scared and they start to back away from it. I know, good thing we're not recording the service to see that those sort of moves there. But they get these quivers when the word Mufasa is thrown out there. And I think for a lot of us, we do the exact same thing when we start to throw out the word confrontation, don't we? Like confrontation. No. Don't give me any part of confrontation whatsoever. I mean, let's get real honest. This is the honest, full participation. I know this scares a lot of you out there, but it'll be really simple. This is the part of the service where I'm going to ask a question and ask you to raise your hand. How many of you guys would classify yourself as non-confrontational? Right? I'm raising my hand with you. And there are more of you out there that are non-confrontational, but raising your hand would just be too confrontational. And so you didn't bother to do it. But the reality is so much of us, when we think about conflict and confrontation, it's one of those things that we would rather do without. It sends fear all throughout us. And we think, you know what, I would rather do life without this thing called confrontation. But undoubtedly, what I also know is that as we go through life, every single one of us in this room will have a moment where we have someone in our life who makes an unwise choice that affects their life or affects our life. Every single one of us, as we walk out into this world, will see things that are unfair and unjust, that are broken, that are beaten down, that aren't the way they should be. All of us will experience those two things. It is guaranteed in life. It is as assured as death and taxes that we will encounter those situations in our life. And when we do, we have a choice to make. We always have a choice to make. Do I just allow things to continue on the way they've been going? Do I allow that situation to stay the same? Or do I make the difficult choice to stand up and do something about it? And the really scary part is that standing up always requires confrontation. You can write that one down. Standing up in our world always requires confrontation. Standing up to people who aren't standing and standing up to things that are unjust in our city will always require confrontation. And that sparks an immense amount of fear inside of us. But here's the really cool part. Here's the part that I want you to hold on to firmly in the midst of everything that we're going to talk about. We have a God who shows up biggest in the middle of our biggest fears. Did you catch that? Like, that is absolute truth about our God. We have a God who shows up biggest in the middle of our biggest fears. When we embrace our biggest fears in life, that is like us saying, God, I can't do this without you. I need you. I need you to do something big. I need you to take over. And those are the moments where God's like, all right, finally, I've been waiting for this. Now we get to do something incredible. Now we get to make a really, really big difference. But unfortunately, for most of us, when it comes to this thing called conflict and confrontation, we fall into one of two extremes. And I want you to sort of search yourself and to see which of these two extremes you fall into when it comes to confronting things in our world that need to be confronted. The first is this. This is where the majority of us lie. We lie in this place that we are unwilling to confront. Like we treat conflict and confrontation like it is the plague. And oftentimes in our life, we chalk this one up to, well, you know what? Jesus was 100% grace. He was all about grace. And so I'm just offering them grace over and over and over again. And we fall into this fully grace category. But on the other hand, for some of us, confrontation doesn't scare us at all. In fact, we sort of like to be in a debate. There are a few of you weirdos out there that we like to engage in these moments of conflict, and they actually like rise our blood pressure and they really get us ticking and they get us going. And for those of us who feel that way, we fall into the other side of the extreme sometimes. And that is oftentimes we confront unlovingly. We see a problem without even thinking it through. We're jumping on that. We're pouncing on it. And that needs a Facebook or a social media post right now about that injustice. And we're going to jump out there and we're going to say something and we're going to do something and we're going to react in the moment instead of thinking through it. And we fall into the, well, when Jesus came, he was 100% truth. And so I'm just telling him the truth. It's just the truth. But there's this really incredible thing about Jesus that oftentimes is so hard for me as a human. Like, I struggle with this. And I struggle with it because I fall into the unwilling to confront camp. But Jesus found this perfect balance of both. He was perfectly graceful and perfectly truthful. He had a combination of both of those things in his life. And throughout this series, we've been talking about this one man that did the exact same thing. When it came to confrontation, he found this perfect middle ground. His name was Daniel. He lived about 600 years before Christ, about 2600 BC. Sorry, 2600 years ago, 600 BC. And this man named Daniel was a part of this country, a part of these group of people that were called the Israelites. That's who Daniel was. Daniel was an Israelite. And the reality was, at this time for Daniel, everything was crumbling around him. Nothing in his city, nothing in his country was going the way that it should be going. And he was faced with all of these moments of, do I just allow things to keep going the way that they've been going? Do I sit and watch as things crumble around me? Or do I stand? Do I face my fears, stand up, and do something about them? Am I willing to confront the problems happening all around me? And my hope throughout this series is this, that as we look at this story of Daniel, that it lights a fire inside of us, that it inspires us to be a little bit more like him and to begin to stand, even though it's hard, even though no one else is standing, that we're willing to do the same. And for Daniel, he faced really difficult situations when he was faced with the choice to stand. Last week, I introduced you to a man named King Nebuchadnezzar. And if you missed last week, you weren't able to be here. King Neb was the king of the Babylonians. They were one of the enemies of Israel. More than likely, the Babylonians were about enemies of everybody. But they were so huge at the time that they would just walk in, and if they saw an opportunity, they would conquer you, demolish you, and rule over you. And that's exactly what King Neb did to the Israelites. They were weakened, he saw an opportunity, he marched in with his gigantic army and crushed them. And he was so oppressive that he wanted every person that he ever came into contact with to know that he was in control. He wanted every person to feel his wrath, to know that he was king, and to believe that he was God. And so as he marched in and he took over Israel and he destroyed everything about their past, everything about their present, and sought to destroy everything about their future, he was looking to trample everyone who stood in the way of that. In fact, just to give you a little bit of context, true story. In Saddam Hussein's memoirs, he idolized King Neb. He wanted to model his reign and his rule after that of King Nebuchadnezzar. And he actually believed, he wrote this, he actually believed that he was King Neb reincarnated. And so when you think of Saddam Hussein, very similarly, that's the oppressive ruler that King Neb was. Probably 1,000-fold greater than that. He was looking to demolish everything in his wake. And as all of this was taking place, as all of this rule and all of this wrath was happening to the people around him, this guy named King Neb had a dream. And the dream went something like this. We find this in the book of Daniel. There was this great tree that stretched into the heavens, bigger and greater than any tree in all of the world. And from that tree, there were many fruit. And all of the world fed off of that fruit. All of the world found shelter underneath of that tree. And they all looked to that tree. And they saw that it was larger and greater than any other tree that had ever stood on the earth. But one day, a messenger came down from heaven. This is all within the dream. A messenger came down from heaven, and he said to lop off all of the branches of the tree, to cut the tree down, but to leave the stump there, to scatter all of the good fruit and all of the leaves and everything that had fed off of this tree, and to just leave the stump there so that it could be soaked by the dew from the heavens. And for 7 periods of time, the stump of that tree would think and act like wild animal. Until one day, the largest tree would realize who the Most High really was. And so he has this dream, and as you can imagine, King Neb is freaked out by this. Like, this really scares him. And so he seeks out all of the wise men in his kingdom, and he pulls them in, and he says, here's the dream. Can you interpret the dream? What does this mean? And no one could interpret the dream. Now, I don't know about you, but when you heard that story, and then you hear it followed up with no one could interpret the dream, I'm like, really? Like, I think a second grader could pretty much get the gist of what that dream was saying. I don't think it was that no one could interpret the dream. I think it was that no one would interpret the dream, right? Like, for all of these men, they knew the wrath that could come down on them for giving a negative report of what the dream meant. And so for them, it was just safer and it was just easier to ignore all of the problems around them. It was just safer and easier for them not to do anything, to just act like, oh, everything's going to be fine. It's just a dream. It was just bad pasta the night before, I think. Don't worry about it. And oftentimes, when I make the correlation, I feel like I individually am a lot like a lot of those wise men. It's just a whole lot easier for me to look out into my city and for me to say, well, things aren't that bad. To look out into my city and to say, well, I'm only going to get hurt if I try to do something about it. I could fail. This could not work. And that's going to diminish my self-esteem. So let's just not do anything about it. Things are okay. It's how we're living right now. If things never get any better or any worse, we'll all do just fine. And so we choose day after day after day to just ignore the problem, to just allow it to keep going on the way that it's been going on, much like these men said, we don't want to touch that problem. We know King Neb is a problem to our country and to all of the people, but let's just ignore it. It's a whole lot easier if we don't do anything about it, if we don't stand up. Let's just sit and go, I don't know how to do anything. But there was one man who said, I'm tired of sitting. I know what this means, and I know the problems that are happening. And no matter what it cost me, I'm going to stand up. But I'm going to stand up in the right way, at the right time, for the right reasons. And so King Neb comes to Daniel. And he says, Daniel, do you know what this means? And Daniel, in all of his wisdom and in all of his discernment, he says, yeah, I know what it means. Let me tell you what it means. But here's what I find incredible, and I want you to hold on to this thought because we're going to come back and revisit this. Before we jump into verse 24 in Daniel 4, right before this, we see this phrase come out of Daniel's mouth. To my king, I wish this wasn't going to happen to you. I wish this was going to happen to all of your enemies. But unfortunately, the message is for you. Right? He showed an incredible amount of tact and love. That with all of my heart, I wish this wasn't about you. But what I'm about to tell you, you've asked for my advice. I see the injustices, and I'm going to do something about it. Here's what Daniel says, starting in verse 24. This is what the dream means, Your Majesty. and what the Most High has declared will happen to my Lord the King. You will be driven from human society, and you will live in the fields with the wild animals. You will eat grass like a cow, and you will be drenched with the dew of heaven. 7 periods of time will pass while you live this way, until you learn that the Most High rules over the kingdoms of the world and gives them to anyone he chooses. But the stump and the roots of the tree were left in the ground. This means that you will receive your kingdom back again when you have learned that heaven rules. You see, here he steps out there and he begins to stand up for the injustices that he sees going on. But he doesn't stop there. He doesn't stop with the bad news. He says, no. In this confrontation, in this conflict, I'm looking for restoration. I'm looking for resolution. I'm looking to help. I'm looking to reach out and to offer you a way to get out of the hurt and the brokenness that's happening around you. And so he continues on and he says, I'm going to go a step further in my love, in my grace, but also in my truth. He says this in verse 27. King Nebuchadnezzar, please accept my advice. Stop sinning and do what is right. Break from your wicked past and be merciful to the poor. Perhaps then you will continue to prosper. You see, what I think we see all throughout that story are some incredible tips from Daniel on what it looks like to confront our world in a way that actually brings about positive change. How to confront things or how to confront people in our world, and how to stand up to those things in a way that actually makes things better, that actually changes our city, that actually changes people's hearts, that actually changes our world, that actually begins to cure and alleviate some of the injustices that are happening around us, that actually begins to make us difference makers for God. And this morning, I want to sort of fly through here just a few of these tips that I think we learn from Daniel on how we stand up and how we confront. The first is this. I think for us to be good at confrontation, for us to show wisdom and discernment, and to actually make a positive difference instead of having people just run away from us, not want anything to do with us, not want anything to do with the church, the first tip that we have to adhere to is this. We have to know who we're confronting. We have to know who we're confronting. And here's what I mean by that. I've shared this before, but I think oftentimes we need reminded of this, and that is in our lives, oftentimes we hold everybody to our standards. We believe that every non-Christian should act like a Christian, even though they've never agreed to act like a Christian. You see, our right in this world isn't to judge them. Our right isn't to hold non-Christians to our standard, to expect non-Christians to be Christian. Our tip for confrontation when it comes to those people is we have been called by God to love them, to offer grace to them, to offer mercy to them, to reach out to them, to lovingly, with tact, with wisdom and discernment, when asked for, to offer advice, to offer loving counsel to them. Not to just shout and yell and try to make as big a fool of them as we can. You see, for us to get this confrontational thing right, we have to know who we're confronting. When it comes to believers who are sitting down, we spur each other on with love, with grace, with truth. But we allow others to speak truth into our life. You see, sometimes confrontation is just as much how much are we willing to take. You see, don't think that you can spur somebody else on if you're not willing to be spurred too. Every time I stand up here on this stage and I say something to you, I'm giving you the right to spur me back. It's not going to feel good. Sometimes it's going to hurt. But sometimes we need that to get going, to start standing when God's called us to stand. The second tip that we learn is we have to know what you're confronting. We have to know what we're confronting. We have to set our sights on something that's happening, an injustice that's happening in our world, and we have to attack that with everything that we can. We have to go after that. And I want to pose this question to you. What if we, as a church, what if we spent our time trying to confront things to benefit people instead of confronting people to benefit our things? What if we spent our time trying to confront things to benefit people instead of confronting people to benefit our things? And you're saying, well, Ben, what are our things? My reputation, so I feel better about myself, so I feel like I haven't made so many mistakes, so I can cure my own guilt. My own stuff that's going on inside of me, it feels a whole lot better when I can push somebody else down. But what if we took our attention off of talking not so much about what we're against, but rather talking about what we're for? What if we began to fight against things instead of fighting against people? Fighting against things for the sake of the people in our world who need us to fight for the things for them, who need us to stand in the gap for them, who are broken and hurting and impoverished and need someone to proclaim the hope of Christ. You see, I don't think that when we reach the end, and I want you to catch this, I don't think that when we reach the end, that we're going to be so much judged on our failures as we're going to be judged on our tries. That's just what I believe. And you can take that or leave that. But I don't think when we stand face to face with the Creator of the universe, He's going to say, well, you gave your heart to that, and you did everything you could, but you didn't cure it all. Sorry, you're a failure. I think he's going to look at us and say, I saw that you tried. I saw that you gave it everything that you had. I saw that you went after that with all your heart, that you loved people with everything that you had. And sure, sometimes it didn't work out, but I recognize your heart. I recognize your effort. I recognize your tries. I don't care if you fail. I care if you try. What would it look like for us to know what you're confronting? The third tip is we have to begin to confront to restore. I talked about this earlier. What would it look like for us to have restoration in mind? Check this out in Galatians chapter 6, verse 1. Here's what it talks about as we're confronting other people as Christ followers. Here's the instruction that it gives to us. We're to confront them gently and humbly to help that person back onto the right path. To help that person back onto the right path. We have this look at, you know what, we're not helping you because we're right and you're wrong. We confront because we want other people to be right with God. Not right in this world, not right with us. We confront because we want them to be right with God. We help them back onto the right path. And how do we do it? By confronting with caution. What were those first two words that it said there? We do it gently and humbly, knowing that I'm broken too, knowing that I could slip up at any moment too. You see, do you realize that the approach matters? The way that you approach somebody else, it matters in your message. Your approach can ruin your message. And so we need to be careful at how we approach. But then it continues on and it finishes with this. But be careful not to fall into the same temptation yourself. You see, as we confront others and then we fall into the exact same temptation, we ruin our message again. For us, we have to be willing to confront with caution. See, this morning, if you get nothing else as we finish, I want you to get this. I think sometimes we get caught up in this train of thought that me confronting you, that me helping you, somehow means that I'm telling you that I'm better than you. You helping me, you confronting me is a message that you're better than me. You see, standing up to the injustices, standing up to the sitter downers, standing up in this world is not about a message of I'm better than you or you're better than me. It's a message of all of us are lower than God. We're not higher than each other. We're all lower than God, just trying our best. I mean, isn't that the goal? Just trying our best to lift each other up just a little bit closer to the one who cares about us and loves us and wants the best for us, who doesn't want to see us hurting and broken and poor and impoverished and beaten down, right? Isn't that what it said in Psalms 12? That he wants to come to our rescue. And not only does he want to come to our rescue, but he wants to come to our rescue with a bunch of people around him saying, we're all here to do the exact same thing, to align ourselves with the heart of Christ. And as we do that, as we're just trying to lift each other up just a little bit more, what we begin to see is we begin to see lives change. We begin to see people mended. We begin to see brokenness fixed in our world. Not in the snap of a finger, but over time, as we stay on it. You see, Daniel didn't see the reward immediately. As he confronted King Nebuchadnezzar, guess what? The dream was true. It took 7 years of being a wild animal, eating grass, and living with the cows for King Neb to finally realize, I'm not the Most High, but he is. And this is where Daniel gets to see his reward to confronting in the right way, the right time, for the right reasons. It says this, after this time had passed, I, Nebuchadnezzar, looked up to heaven. My sanity returned, and I praised and worshiped the Most High, and I honored the one who lives forever. At some point, we're going to have to take a risk, people. And it's going to be messy, and it's going to be uncomfortable, but we have a world that needs us to get messy. We have a world that needs us to be uncomfortable. We have a world that needs us to stop sitting and start standing. Because things will never get better as we just sit and watch things go in the same direction they've always gone. But things will begin to change when we stand up with our God for the right reasons, in the right ways, at the right time. This is our time. Are you willing to stand up and do something about it? Will you pray with me? Father, this morning, we thank you for the incredible example of your son. that he perfectly displayed? What it meant to stand up, to be full of truth, but also to be full of grace in a world that desperately needs us to find that balance. That you provided us with examples like Daniel, who are willing to risk it all to confront the injustices of the world. People like Daniel, who were willing to stand when everybody else was sitting. God, this morning, we're asking for two things. Number one, God, we're asking for you to help us put our fears behind us, put our hatred of confrontation behind us, and to charge ahead. But God, secondly, and most importantly, we're asking you to join us in this. We're asking you to help us. We're asking you to allow us to make a bigger difference with you than what we can without you. God, we need you. We don't want to stand without you, because standing without you means we're standing for the wrong things at the wrong times for the wrong reasons. And God, we don't want to ruin our message by the wrong approach and by standing for the wrong things. May we be a church, may we be families, may we be individuals who align ourselves with you. It's in your name I pray. Amen.